I'd rather do is keep it focused on veterans' issues. Is that correct, Donna?
That is correct, Charlie.
Thank you very kindly. So I noticed we've already got a couple of people on the telephone. Do you want to go straight to some of them and maybe respond a little bit? Or do you have some kind of an opening statement you'd like to make?
Well, this morning, Charlie, I'd just like everybody to know how important our veterans' issues are in the upcoming election. Our veterans and the issues surrounding our veterans really need to be top priority for our presidential candidates, and today that's what we're going to be speaking about.
Thank you very kindly. We're going to go straight to the telephones. I notice we've already got some calls. If you would like to be one, oh, hey, looks like we've got one of our guests. Let's go ahead and welcome her. The caller may want to speak with this person. Mary Ellen Salzano. Oh, my God, what did I do? I hit the wrong button is what I did. Mary Ellen, call back in, please, and I'll try to get my head straight. Carissa, Carissa, you are on the air at KSCO. Thank you very much for your call.
Good morning, Carissa.
Oh, good morning, Donna. How are you?
I'm fine, Carissa. Paul, I'd like to introduce Carissa. Carissa is calling in today from Texas, and she is the head of Military Spouses for Change. And Carissa is the head of this movement to bring our presidential candidates to Fort Hood to address wounded warriors, veterans, military families, and veterans advocates. So I'm going to let Carissa come on and talk to us. So, Carissa, good morning. You can go ahead and tell us what's up.
Well, thank you, Donna, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to address your listeners. I guess the issue for me is I think that everybody would agree that the defining electoral issue for 2008 is the war in Iraq. But it seems as though the discussion revolves around ending the war. Either you stay there or you go. Either we stay or we go. Either we stay or we go. But the reality is, for our military families and for our soldiers, the war in Iraq does not end when a service member comes home. That's bringing soldiers home, that's just the beginning of the conversation that we need to be having. And I think that a lot of people don't realize that, don't realize the extent of the issues that need to be discussed, the needs that our service members have and that their families have. And what we're trying to do by having this presidential forum at Fort Hood on veterans, wounded warriors, and military families is we're trying to raise awareness, and we're trying to let the American voters know that when they are choosing their nominee for their party, their vote or who they choose will have a tremendous impact on millions of veterans and service members and their families, including children. And there's so many issues to talk about, and I'll just stop with that and let you ask questions if you'd like, but there's some things that people, let me just say this, some things that people don't realize. For example, the Physicians for Social Responsibility recently came out and they said that they're estimating, just to begin with, a cost of $660 billion to care for our wounded warriors from Iraq and Afghanistan over the course of their lives. That it's going to cost as much to take care of them as it did for us to engage in these wars to begin with. And so that's just dealing with medical needs. We're not talking about mental health needs. We're not talking about job rehabilitation or housing or some sort of transitional program from military life to civilian life for our wounded warriors. That's just speaking purely to the medical aspect of it. So there are a lot of issues.
Donna, we've been joined on the telephone here by some other guests, some of the people that you'd arranged to have take part in this forum. Like to introduce Paul Sullivan. Mr. Sullivan, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. And Donna, would you care to tell our audience who Mr. Sullivan is?
Paul Sullivan is joining us this morning from Washington, D.C., and Paul is the director of Veterans for Common Sense. Good morning, Paul. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
So, Paul, would you like to go ahead and tell us a little bit about what you think the issues are for our veterans?
The number one issue for our returning veterans is this. What is American society, all 300 million of us, what are we going to do to make sure our returning veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan readjust as best as possible from a war zone back to civilian life?
And, Paul, what do you think are some of the important issues for our candidates to address immediately for our veterans?
Right now, veterans and their families are focused on the Department of Veterans Affairs, or the VA. That's the government agency responsible for taking care of veterans after they have left the military. The Department of Veterans Affairs should really have three main goals that the presidential candidates look at very closely. The first goal is this. VA must have a good reputation, and it must be well publicized so that when veterans start to experience any health problems, disability problems, or they want to use their GI Bill to go to college, that they know about the Department of Veterans Affairs and they want to go to the Department of Veterans Affairs. So that's the first important thing. The second important thing is when a veteran does have a medical problem and they go to the Department of Veterans Affairs for help, that they get help right away. There are tragic cases of veterans going to VA for mental health care only to be turned away and then subsequently and tragically commit suicide. And the third thing the presidential candidate should focus on for VA is to make sure that our returning veterans and their families, where the veterans are disabled and can't work, that the government processes the paperwork quickly so the veteran has money to put food on the table and pay the rent to make sure that their life doesn't spin out of control. Right now, because of a failure to plan for 1.7 million troops going to war, we now have veterans waiting 6 months to get disability benefits. Could anybody now in this economy go 6 months without benefits? So we're hoping that presidential candidates take a look at improving the reputation of VA, speeding up health care, and speeding up the delivery of disability payments to veterans.
And can I say something, Donna?
Yeah, please, Carissa. And
what I would like to say as well is we often, you know, speak in terms of, you know, the veteran, the service member, but what we're also talking about is their family. You know, when you have a service member who is no longer provide for his family or her family, you are talking about this affects a spouse and oftentimes affects a spouse and multiple children as well. So, for example, I have a very good friend, and this is a very common situation because I'm an active duty spouse. You know, I have a very good friend of mine, and she is 26 years old. They have three children. She has a high school degree. She's got three children. The oldest is 7. Her middle child is 5 and is autistic. Her husband is in Iraq right now. If he were to come back and he had a traumatic brain injury or just if he in any way was incapacitated and unable to provide for them, she doesn't know what she would do. How would, you know, and it was on her to provide for three children and her husband, her disabled husband. Where would she even begin? I mean, we're talking about families that would be poverty stricken as a result of something that happened from their spouse's service to this country.
Now, nowadays, we for a number of years now, we have had no conscription in this country. We have a volunteer military. When I served, of course, we still had the draft, but that was a long time ago. And in my opinion, it's a good thing that they did away with it. I hope it never comes back. But it's important when we think about veterans issues now to remember the people who are in the service signed up and actually volunteered their time, their services. And I can't conceive that there would be anybody, no matter what their political stripe, who would be willing to say, well, that's tough. It's inadmissible. There's no possible way any person who claims to be a human being could take that attitude. What I'm curious about and what I think our listeners would like to know are some more specifics, just exactly what sort of issues regarding veterans and veterans support would you like to see the presidential candidates addressing?
As Carissa mentioned a few minutes ago, the real top priorities are mental health care, medical care, education, housing, financial. We really need to make those issues, especially the mental health issues, for our returning veterans top priority. So, and also right now, in the next, I believe, 7 to 10 years, there's expected to be 700,000 veterans coming into the VA system. So I think one of the really important things that we have to look at is how is the next president going to not only handle the new troops that will be coming into the system, but be able to maintain the care of the veterans that are already utilizing the VA.
And I'd also like to respond to the point that you made about the fact that there is no draft. If we cannot effectively take care of these families and these service members and these wounded warriors, we will not be able to maintain. How are we going to maintain this voluntary force?
Precisely. If people get the idea that veterans are not cared for in any kind of reasonable way, recruitment will simply disappear.
Right, which is what we're seeing now. Which is what we're seeing now is we are seeing recruitment bonuses ranging anywhere from $30,000 up to $150,000, and reenlistment bonuses up to $150,000. That is what the military has had to resort to try to maintain the force that it needs. And we are seeing what's called moral waivers. And these moral waivers for criminal convictions. So 12% of our new recruits have received moral waivers for criminal convictions. So since 2001, 125 of those moral waivers have been for violent criminal convictions, such as assault. And this is, so there's a concern there about things that we're having to do to just maintain. Already we're seeing difficulty. We're already having difficulty with this, maintaining the force that we need. The fact is we need a large, robust military force. This is what we need. We are a large nation. We need a large military force. But how are we going to maintain that? We're already struggling.
I believe that in 08, they will spend $2.5 billion on recruitment and reenlistment bonuses. And as we know, a lot of our troops are not only going for one deployment, they're going back for their third, fourth, and fifth deployments, which
That's
is
right.
it's just out of hand to expect a soldier or a Marine to go back for their fourth or fifth deployment. It's just out of the question. So we really need to figure out how we're going to stop these multiple deployments for our military personnel that are already enlisted. So that is a major issue that also needs to be addressed.
Nature of the beast. With a professional military, redeployments are going to be part of what you see as just as an outgrowth of that. The fact that you don't have this constant, like when we had the draft, you know, they'd call up, what, 100,000 men a month or something like that. It was just unbelievable. And you had this fresh blood coming through. Of course, it wasn't that good for the military effort because you continually had these new, green, inexperienced, untrained people who would then be far more at risk than people who really knew what they were doing. and had, you know, who were professionals and who were behaved as professionals and who were trained as professionals.
But there's another side to that coin, though. The military studies coming out now show that soldiers deploying twice or more to the war zone are at a 50% increased risk for returning with a mental health problem. What's happened is we are past the point of diminishing return, mm-hmm. and we are wearing out our soldiers. And we've replaced them with mercenaries like Blackwater. We've extended their tours in the war zone from 12 months to 15 months, and sometimes almost up to 2 years. Yep. And then we've immediately brought them back to the war zone, sometimes after only 3 or 4 months back in the United States. So they're really burning out the professional soldiers that we do have. And the proof is in the pudding. The Department of Veterans Affairs has already treated more than 250,000 patients from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, including 100,000 mental health cases. And we are very concerned at Veterans for Common Sense about the discrimination that's going on against veterans with mental health conditions. And the proof is in the pudding in the reports that I used to prepare while I worked at the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Is this discrimination in the community at large, or is this something that the government or government agencies are responsible for?
This is discrimination by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs against veterans with mental health conditions.
What form does this discrimination take?
Let me give you an example. Right now, the VA has diagnosed and is providing medical treatment to more than 52,000 Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans.
Mm-hmm.
However, only 19,000 are actually receiving disability payments for their mental health condition for PTSD. And we have asked VA several times, and so has Congress, why are there 33,000 troops, veterans, being treated by VA for post-traumatic stress disorder who are not yet, or not at all, receiving disability payments? Those veterans are at the high risk for drug and alcohol abuse, broken families, homelessness, and suicide. It's very important that a disabled veteran who can't work be able to have some subsistence so that they can put food on the table and care for their family.
Got a question on that, Paul. I don't know that much about this field. I'm not an expert in mental health, obviously. I have enough trouble trying to cling to the few shreds I have. But it would seem that post-traumatic stress syndrome or something of this nature could be something that a person would feel in certain degrees. And that the answer to the question there might conceivably be, well, the more serious cases are receiving not only treatment but also some sort of support, and that some of the people who suffer from this syndrome are still functional and able to work.
That's a good question.
Is that the case, or am I in error?
Your idea has merit, but believe it or not, the government addresses it. The VA provides for disability ratings from 0% all the way up to 100%.
Oh, I see. So there is some question of degree taken into account.
That's correct. Here's the sad part. About 60% of veterans receive about $350 a month in disability benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So, right, while most people think that when a veteran gets disability payments, they might get about $2,500 a month, that's the exception, not the rule. The rule is that 60% of the veterans receiving disability payments from the Department of Veterans Affairs receive about $350 a month. That's all.
Are the people who are receiving these smaller payments, I guess the word I would use is, are they functional? Can they work, or are they disabled to the point where they really are not capable of doing that?
Well, that's going to be on a case-by-case basis. The bigger policy question is this. If a veteran is disabled at all from PTSD and the government agrees that they're being treated for it, But only 19,000 out of the 52,000 are receiving payments for it.
Mm-hmm.
And those average payments are only a couple of $100.
Mm-hmm.
Then what's really going on? We're actually trying to press for the facts from the Department of Veterans Affairs, and they're fighting. The VA does not want to release any more statistics. Congressmen have asked for the information. Veterans for Common Sense has sent what's called a Freedom of Information Act request to VA to find out what's going on. And VA is being very secretive about what's going on. Well, just a message to the Department of Veterans Affairs. The people of the United States run this country, and the Department of Veterans Affairs has a legal as well as moral obligation to tell the people of the United States how many of our veterans are coming back from the war, what are their medical problems, what are their disability problems, and how much money is it costing. Just, we don't need to know about the particulars of every veteran and who they are. We need to know the big numbers so that Americans can turn around and say, Congressman Farr, right there in Santa Cruz, I understand that VA doesn't have enough money to hire psychiatrists to see all the veterans. And the reason I know that is because VA's own data says that. Well, here's the problem. In the last few years under the current administration, they have enormously restricted and reduced the amount of information they're giving the public about what's going on among the returning veterans. How can we have an open, honest, frank, factual debate about the needs of our veterans if the government is playing hide the sausage? And let's keep the information from the public.
I notice we have somebody else who's joined us on the telephone here. Donna, are you familiar with Nadia McCaffrey?
Oh, yes. Nadia McCaffrey is... an amazing woman. She is a Gold Star mother. Nadia lost her son Patrick in the war in Iraq. To honor Patrick's memory, Nadia has created the Veterans Village, just a wonderful concept for our veterans. So I'd like to say hello and welcome Nadia to the show this morning. Hello, Nadia.
Hello, Donna. Sorry I'm late.
Oh, that's okay, Nadia. Nadia, thank you for joining us this morning. Nadia, if you could just tell us a little bit about your cause and about Patrick and how important you think it is for the presidential candidates to really pay attention to the needs of our veterans. So if you could just go ahead, Nadia.
Well, yes. I didn't choose to become a Gold Star mother or a military mother for that fact. And after my son's death, I had to listen to many stories directly from veterans. Most of them at first were from Patrick's unit. And after the return, you know, everybody immediately was pretty happy about being home. But unfortunately, it was not as easy afterward as they thought it would be. I started to face or to hear cases like Stephen, for example. Stephen is a close friend of Patrick and National Guard, early 40, married for over 10 years, young girl. And he was so glad to be home that, you know, he couldn't wait to take care of his family and go on with his life, basically. Unfortunately, it didn't work that way. Come to find out that Steve could not even leave his house. He had acute PTSD. On top of that, he started to have pain from his neck down his spine, excruciating pain, and he could not get a proper evaluation from the VA. He was pushed back and back and back. All they did is take him in as emergency patient or walk-in. And would be most of the time given some morphine and sent home because they couldn't handle it. The thing is, they are swamped. Nothing was made or nobody thought that so many wounded people would come back this way. Anyway, when I saw this, I really started to lose patience and get upset. So that's where I took Steve to the major media. He was on the Today Show two or three times. And his story appeared on the major newspaper as well. And after this, of course, he received a call from the VA asking him to come for a complete evaluation. Well, it turned out that not just that he had acute PTSD, but he also, in Iraq, blew up, his Humvee blew up on a roadside bomb. He was ejected from it, and he, after a while, he was able to stand up and walk away from it. So because of this, he was told that he was okay. There was never any follow-up on that. Well, he had 3 crushed discs on his spine, and that's where the pain was coming from, of course. So finally, only about a month and a half ago, he had the operation. And hopefully he's going to be okay. But this is only one example. Now, I have countless stories to tell, and this is why it's so important to be there for them.
Well, Nadia, thank you very much for being with us, and we'll probably hear a little bit more about you in a few minutes. Paul and Carissa also, and James in Seaside has been our first caller to join us. We'll be talking with him in just a couple of minutes. We need to take a break right now, very important. This is the Saturday special. We're talking veterans issues and veterans affairs today. I'm your host, Charlie Friedman. Donna Jacobs is here with me in the studio, and we have some people joining us from around the country. Right now, it is 34 minutes past 10 o'clock at KSCO Santa Cruz. We're going to take a momentary break, and then we'll be back, hopefully, with your phone calls. We have open lines at 479-1080. That's 479-1080.
If you're planning an office party, a holiday gathering, or a New Year's celebration, remember, for a safe, fun, and festive way to celebrate the holidays, have plenty of Martinelli's Gold Medal Sparkling Cider on hand. Martinelli's, in the traditional champagne bottle, is the perfect choice for your holiday gatherings. It has all the elegance and sparkle of champagne, but without the alcohol. And you know, Martinelli's has the best flavor because it's made only from U.S.-grown fresh apples, not from foreign concentrate like most other brands. Martinelli's looks great, tastes great, and complements all your favorite foods, from party snacks and buffets to holiday dinners. Martinelli's, fun, festive, and non-alcoholic. Enjoy the original, Martinelli's Gold Medal Sparkling Cider, a family tradition since 1868.
This is Stephen Martinelli. I'm here with my son, John, the fourth generation president of our family's 140-year-old cider company.
All of us at Martinelli's wish you a safe and festive holiday season and a happy new year.
It's that time of year again when you'll be running your old inefficient heater. This year, Day and Night wants to make sure you don't get left out in the cold. We want to help you make sure your home is comfortable, healthy, and efficient. We will even pay you to replace your old furnace. That's right, pay you to replace that old furnace. The new Day and Night furnaces have newer, more efficient heat exchangers that will keep your family safer and more comfortable this winter. Not to mention the newer furnaces are 20 to 30% more efficient than the older models. And with energy prices on the rise, that means lower bills for you. So if you need a new furnace or just think you might, call for a free estimate. In Salinas, call State Metal Heating and Air Conditioning, 800-549-0825. Gilroy Heating and Air Conditioning, 408-842-6913. Massey Heating and Air Conditioning in King City at 831-385-3564. If you didn't get those names, visit us on the web at www.comfortdayandnight.com. That's www.comfortdayandnight.com. Remember, Day and Night wants you cozy all winter long.
Hi, everyone. This is Judy DeVilbiss. You know, life is about a lot of choices. My choice was to get involved with the Youngevity Company. So every morning I get up and first thing I do is go out into the kitchen and I mix up my 90 nutrient program from Youngevity. I love it, but best of all, about 6 months ago, or maybe a little longer, I decided that I'd like to go out and try running. And actually I go out and I compete. And to my amazement, I'm actually coming in first in my class. I've actually won 3 first prizes, which really makes me feel great. Hey, come on, I'm 66 years old. I'm not brand new. But I'll tell you what, every day when I'm going to race, the first thing I do in the morning is take the Ultimate Classic with the Rainforest, and I shoot it down, and then I go about my business and go out and do my run. I just did one today, and hey, you know what? I won. Come on, 888-352-7500. Don't you want to be a winner? 888-352-7500.
Two, 10, 1, 2, 3, 4. Absolutely. Nothing.
David, you did that on purpose. That's interesting, but it doesn't swing. You know what I mean? Oh, well, that's the kind of music that David inflicts on me when he gets the chance. On my own program, the Happy Hour Show on KSCO from 4 to 6 on weekdays, we get in there and play something with, more of a big band sound. Anyway, this is the Saturday Special. I'm Charlie Friedman. Donna Jacobs is here with me in the studio, and Mary Kay has decided to join us. And we have a number of people on the guest line talking about veterans issues. We're also beginning to get some calls from some of our listeners, and those are what we'd like to get to as quickly as possible. I should mention the phone number, for heaven's sake, 479-1080, 479-1080, if you'd like to join us and talk about some of these veterans issues. James in Seaside, you are on the electrical radio. Do you hear us? James?
Sure.
Ah, there. Very good. If I turn things up, everything works well. It mentions here you'd like to speak to the gentleman from Veterans for Common Sense.
Yes, I would.
Go ahead, please.
I have a couple of questions for him, if you don't mind.
Hi, James. How are you doing?
I'm doing real well.
Thanks for calling in.
I am a veteran, two-time serving in the war.
In Iraq?
I have a question for you.
You served in Iraq twice?
No, I served in Vietnam twice.
Oh, great. Well, welcome home, James.
Oh, thank you for the welcome home. But I think you're giving a false impression of the VA.
Well, let me say something. Let me help clarify that. I worked at VA, and I'm also a veteran. I'm a Gulf War veteran. The doctors at VA are great, and most of the employees I know at VA are great. What's happened in Washington the last couple of years is epitomized by this single event. In 2005, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Jim Nicholson, told senators that he had enough money to take care of all the veterans from Iraq and Vietnam and the Gulf War and all the previous wars in peacetime. And there were bitter, bitter hearings, and he insisted that VA had enough money. And then 3 months later, he was back at VA asking for $3 billion because VA was going to be forced to lay off doctors because it didn't have enough money. So what you have is a lot of great doctors and people helping veterans with their claims and stuff, but they're overworked because the politicians in Washington didn't have enough money to hire more staff to help out the veterans and the existing VA staff. So that's really the problem with VA right now.
But see, I don't think a person should have to serve in the military voluntarily, go to combat twice, and come back and expect the citizens to take care of them for the rest of their lives.
Well, nobody said that, but I'll tell you what.
See, the only thing I hear you talking about is people with mental disorders.
Sure, mental disorders.
I know people who claim they have mental disorders who are right now drawing VA checks are more sound than I am. And I don't think it's right for people to be lobbying for people to take care of somebody who volunteered to serve in the war or in the Army and knowing the Army's going to war and come back and expect for them to take care of them and their families for the rest of their life unless they got a serious problem. If a dude loses his legs or a dude is really crazy, then he should be locked up or put in of some type of home to be taken care of. But I don't think the citizens should be expected to take care of somebody because they go to war twice in a term of their service that they volunteer for, come home and say, I'm crazy, or act like they're crazy, just so that we can take care of them. I don't mind paying for people who really hurt or people who really got problems that were caused by the Army.
Hey, James, you raise a really good question. Let me ask you just a silly question here. I don't know about your friend.
Please ask it.
I don't know about your friend. You said that's a little bit better off than
you are, and
he's getting a check.
I know more than one or two people that's doing it.
Okay, good. The Department of Veterans Affairs in Washington randomly pulled about 1,000 claim files from all over the country and had their best people look at these files. And you want to know something? Do you want to know how many cases of fraud they found?
How many did they find?
Zero. Do you know how many cases they found?
You tell them to come to Seaside, Marina, and Salinas and start looking at people's files there.
Okay. Well, there's something that I noticed working at VA. When you actually start reading through the paperwork, you'll see, especially for the younger veterans, James, they're coming home with several different problems.
But my question to you is,
not just
my question
just
to you
else.
Is why is the younger base of veterans coming home with more problems than we have, and they got better equipment, better weapons, and everything?
Oh, you here, Jen. Good question. James, did you know that in the Iraq war right now, there are...
Well, let's talk about all the wars, not just Iraq war.
Well, I'm going to tell you how...
We're trying to say that the people that are in the Iraq war are not as stable as the people that went to World War I, II, and Vietnam and Korea. They're saying those people are not as stable as we were.
Nobody...
No, we didn't come home with all those problems. We got problems, correct. But we got actual physical problems. We're talking about... Everybody you're talking about is mostly people with mental problems. Is something happening in America that these people are not as sound as the people before them? That so many people are coming home with all these mental problems?
Well, right now, about a third of the Vietnam veterans who came home from the Vietnam War, James,
yes,
came home with mental health problems. Did you
but
know
those,
that?
Most of those people, their mental health problem was caused by themselves because of the amount of drugs they used. I was there, so you can't tell me what was going on. Most of the people I knew that used heavy drugs in Vietnam, they still got heavy problems right now. But that wasn't because of the Army. That was because of their inability to decide what was right and what was wrong.
I see, and you're definitely entitled to your point of view, but science also shows...
Well, see, it's not my point of view. I don't want to pay for somebody coming home playing sick or coming home that's sick because...
They don't really have
a physical problem.
Neither do I.
They can't work.
Let me ask you a couple of questions.
You're telling me if a person worked at a radio station for 10 years and decided to act crazy, that the radio station should still pay for him for the rest of his life?
James, this is DJ in the station. One of the things that all of our veterans prior to Iraq and Afghanistan, it was really unusual for those veterans to face multiple deployments. And our Vietnam veterans were not sent back 2, 3, 4, 5 times.
Well, not unless they volunteered. In 18 months.
Can I ask the producer to please either turn off James' mic so that we can finish or politely ask James to stop interrupting? This is not Fox News, James. We don't play the bully game. So I'm going to either ask you to stop interrupting or we're going to ask the producer to cut you off.
That's fine with me. You cut me off anytime you want to.
Okay. Do you understand that, James?
I understand.
Right. Soldier to soldier, you need to quit it. Now, here's what else I'm going to tell you, James. Okay? You may need to talk to somebody about your anger issues. You seem to have a lot of hostility toward fellow veterans.
Paul, just a second, Paul. I'm going to interrupt there myself. James has raised some interesting points. I don't think it's reasonable to begin addressing his points by saying, well, you have anger management issues. I don't hear that coming from James. He has some concerns.
Charlie, he needs to agree to stop interrupting people. This isn't Fox News.
That goes for all of us.
Is this really clear? Right now, for every death in the Iraq war, 16 veterans are coming back wounded and injured. It wasn't even close to that in the Vietnam War. So what you have when soldiers are surviving traumatic brain injury and amputations and other shrapnel and bullet wounds, they are at much higher risk to suffer mental health problems. So those are the facts, and that's what the science says. Nobody is saying that the soldiers coming back now are weaker than prior generations. And in fact, in prior generations, the rate of veterans coming home with mental health problems has been about the same. It depends on your exposure to combat and the length of your exposure to combat and the intensity of your exposure to combat. And when the science weighs all those things in, the current veterans are much more likely to return home with mental health conditions. It doesn't mean they're bad people or they made bad decisions. And some of them are turning to drugs and alcohol.
And can I make a point?
The government isn't giving them prescriptions or mental health care. It's pretty simple.
Paul, let Carissa have a word.
And I would like to make a point. James, what you're addressing is also a very valid point. Whenever we as a society decide that we are going to provide assistance to a citizen in need, we want to ensure that this person is really in need. And if we had more funding for the VA, if we had more staff, if we had more medical professionals, if we had more mental health professionals, perhaps we would be better able to prevent cases, prevent people who maybe don't deserve it. I'm not saying that there is somebody out there who doesn't deserve it that is getting it, but to acknowledge your point in the cases that you're seeing, a problem we're having is we just don't have enough people to handle all the cases. And so what's happening is there are people who need help who aren't getting it, and perhaps there are people, maybe, like you said, maybe who got help who were getting assistance who maybe they did somehow, maybe they did somehow work the system.
I understand.
But that is a product, I think, of there's so many cases and there's not enough people to deal with these cases.
Does
that make sense?
Carissa, you've done a pretty good job of addressing James's concern. James, I'd like to ask you, you're a two-time vet. Have you gone to the Veterans Administration for any sort of services since you've been back?
I have gone for lots of services. I have found from Vietnam.
Yes.
And they were addressed and taken care of as fast as I thought they could with the paperwork and stuff they had to fill out.
So in your experience,
I have nothing but positive experience from VA.
I want to thank you for making your call today. I appreciate hearing from you.
I appreciate that you let me talk.
Thank you, James.
Not at all, James. Have a great day. Appreciate it.
One thing that I'd like to really make clear as far as my personal opinion goes, I spend a lot of time at the Palo Alto VA hospital, and I am amazed all the time when I go over there at the quality of care given to the patients there. The way they're treated by the staff. I myself think the VA is doing a remarkable job for our troops. And I think what is in question is the funding that goes to the VA. But once again, I really appreciate the VA for the job that they do. But they definitely do need more funding to bring in more not only healthcare professionals, but especially mental health care professionals. But I personally just want to thank the VA.
I agree with what you say about the VA. I've been over there once or twice myself to the center down in Monterey. They do a great job. And the thing that keeps coming to my mind is show me any government agency that says it has enough money. Peter in Salinas, thank you very much for joining our program today. Are you there?
I'm right here.
Hi. Do you have a question for us or for one of our guests?
Well, first I want to thank everybody that made the appearance for being the advocate that all veterans need. I'm really kind of sorry James doesn't share the sympathy that anybody who has been in combat deserves at least consideration in a timely manner when they return. So thank you, Paul, and I'm sorry, Carice, and I didn't catch the other person's name.
This is DJ. I'm president of Not This Time Vets here in Santa Cruz.
I'd also like to speak for the Santa Cruz Women's Club, particularly Mary Kay Zainab, who weekly a group of Santa Cruz Angels goes up to the VA to visit the trauma, head trauma up there. So they deserve recognition in our community for being advocates for wounded vets. Now, my point that Paul brings up, I'd like to remind everybody, is the type of combat our vets are seeing are these explosive devices, and they're bad enough when they maim and dismember the soldiers that are on the receiving end. It's even worse for the guys behind because their ears ring for months. And if you want to talk about creating mental disorders or in your ears ring because you've been in a bomb blast, well, it's really hard for people to understand. Mm-hmm. And my take is thank God for all of you speaking for our guys that put their ass on the line. I appreciate it. And again, thanks, Charlie, for giving me a voice.
Well, Peter, I'm so glad you called. Thank you very kindly.
Oh, Peter, thank you.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Peter. One thing that that's important for Americans to know is this. When it comes to traumatic brain injury from the roadside bomb blast called IED, or improvised explosive devices. The Pentagon's own experts estimate up to 20% of those serving in Iraq and Afghanistan are coming back with mild brain injury. If you do the math, 20% of 1.7 million is about 340,000 veterans who, at a minimum, should be screened to see if they have any problems and treated soon so the problems don't get worse.
We're getting a few other phone calls here. Let's go ahead and hear from some more of our listeners. Chuck in Monterey is the next person we'd like to hear from. Hello, Chuck. Thank you very much for calling us this morning.
Hi. Thank you for answering my call.
Not at all, sir.
I'm defending James because I think James is so right on. He is a real military man. The guy that you have on there is, to me, does not connote the typical military person. He's like a leftist bureaucrat. First of all, he hates Fox News, which means he's already exposed himself. He's exposed himself.
You know, on radio, it's difficult to expose yourself.
No,
he hates Fox News.
He's trying to hide the truth, and
Chuck, one of the things, let's stick with issues here. Now, yeah. Earlier I said, you know, it's the idea of going for the person. Let's not do that.
No. Wait a second. He was attacking James. If he attacks James, and James has the whole right to attack his platform, and that guy's platform is a leftist platform.
Well, now, hold on a second. When he did that, I kind of stepped in, and I said, now this is not where we need to go. Now I'm going to say the same thing to you. If you want to criticize some of the points that Paul has made,
please don't tell me I have an anger management problem.
I'm not going to.
Please don't.
I don't do that. And that's why, you know, I didn't like that either. But if you have, you know, something that, you know, in Paul's presentation, some of the points he's made that you'd like to speak to. I do it quickly though, because we're getting towards the top of the hour.
My biggest concern is that you've got people like that in the military that are trying to direct the military, and then also Jim Nicholson happens to be a personal friend of mine. I know him very well, and the thing is he's extremely qualified, and he could probably do much better running of the government rather than having people like him attack him. And for him to come back and say that he tried to boondoggle people, the next thing he's going to do is probably start running Bush down. And the fact is, I don't have an anger management problem, and neither did the fellow calling in. The thing that made him angry, your host, is the fact that he disagreed with him. Period. So if you disagree with somebody, then you have an anger management problem.
Well, Chuck, thanks for calling and saying it.
Thank you.
Appreciate hearing from you this morning.
Thank you
kindly.
Thank you, Chuck.
Have a good day. We're going to get Scott on the air real quickly before the top of the hour. This is Scott in B.C. Boulder Creek?
Boulder Creek.
Outstanding. Thank you for calling KSCO. Go ahead.
Thank you, Charlie. Yes, Paul, I do wish you to have more respect for soldiers such as James. You know, he knows so much and can offer so much. I have three or four quick points, and I offer a rather creative solution. I heard on NPR that post-traumatic stress disorder is twice as high in children who have been through the foster care system than in Vietnam veterans, okay? Now, another thing, more surviving veterans are surviving because of battlefield discoveries in medical research techniques. And we need a windfall. So what I suggest is the federal government do something creative. For example, legalize marijuana, put pot, and put 100% tax on it, or sell licenses to sell it, and it will free a lot of prisoners that the government is spending a lot of money on. One more point, the federal government, I've read this in Insight magazine twice, I've read it in George magazine, they have a facility, $250 million a year or something, for 8 people, they grow medical marijuana. The government is growing medical marijuana. Okay, and that's all I had to say.
Well, Scott, thank you for calling and saying it here. If you've listened to my my weekday program, you know that I share your ideas about legalization of marijuana, but this is really not the forum I think what you're saying is that you could divert resources in
that
fashion.
That's what I'm saying.
And that's not an unreasonable point. Thank you for calling and making it.
Thank you, Peter.
Point. Oh, I just want to say that the psychiatrist, all they give is drugs. That's all they do. You know, you don't need to pay for people to go to these people. We don't need to waste money on that. But anyway, I'll let you get on with the show. God bless you.
Thank you for calling, Scott. Appreciate hearing from you this morning. We're going to have to take a break in about 2 minutes here, so I'm going to ask the people on the phones to be patient. And let me see if we get too much. I see, and Dave's written me a little note here. I do notice it, Dave, but I think we're going to be okay with it. Donna, did you have a response you wanted to make there?
To
what Scott was saying.
Not really. Oh. But thank you for Scott calling in, Scott.
We've got a program here called the Saturday Special. We're dealing with veterans issues today. We have a few guests on the line. We have Carissa, who's with us, and also Paul Sullivan, who's the Director of Veterans for Common Sense. We also have Nadia McCaffrey with us. And Nadia, I want to thank you for spending some time with us this morning. You are a Gold Star mother. We thank you for your sacrifice, and I certainly, my heart goes out to you, and I wish that he could have come. I came back, and I wish he could have.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. Let me see here. I don't want to take another call before the top of the hour because we only have about 50 seconds here, which is not enough time to really be fair with a caller. I did want to introduce Mary Kay, who's in the studio. Now, I heard a gentleman mention a Mary Kay with the Women's Club. Is that you?
That's me.
That's you. Well, take a little bow there.
Good morning, everybody. I'm the secretary to, my name is Mary Kay Zainab. I'm the secretary with Not This Time Vets and longtime friend of Donna Jacobs. I also do work with the Santa Cruz Women's Club as the Veterans Welfare Chair, and that's what the caller Peter had mentioned. Just, you know, really quickly, I'd like to just say that Donna's, back to Donna's original forum here with the presidential candidates. I think we all need to be our own advocates for our veterans. All the guests here have some good points. I think it's important to remember that then we need to push for legislation with our candidates, local and nationally, to get some of these things accomplished.
We'll give you a chance to elaborate on that in just a few moments. Right now it's 11 o'clock at KSCO Santa Cruz.
Westroads Mall, 3 days after a troubled teen went on a shooting rampage, killing 8 people before turning the gun on himself. Mayor Mike Fahey is there. He says extra security guards are also on hand.
For my position, I want to be here as be as supportive as I can for the workers in the mall as well as the shoppers as well. So I tried to get here a little early to make sure we greeted the workers because they were probably as traumatized as anyone, you know, just having to go through this.
The Von Maur store, where the shootings took place, still closed. The company helping families with funeral arrangements and grief counseling, also establishing a memorial fund for the victims. A pregnant Toledo attorney missing since Wednesday morning found safe at a Six Flags amusement park outside Atlanta this morning. Toledo Police Captain Diana Ruiz Krause.
She did report to law enforcement officials in Cobb that she was kidnapped, and that is the information that we are investigating at this time.
The husband of 35-year-old Karen McConnell Hancock, she's a former Toledo City Council member, telling police his wife had received some threatening phone calls. In his weekly radio address, President Bush saying his administration is helping Americans caught in the subprime mortgage mess. He says Congress hasn't done enough.
Congress needs to pass legislation to modernize the FHA. This bill could allow the FHA to help 250,000 families by the end of 2008.
Delivering the Democrats' radio response, Illinois Senator Dick Durbin blaming the president and Republicans in Congress.
As this Congress nears the end of the year, Democrats share your frustration. You're tired of infighting and inaction in Washington. So are we. It's really time for compromise and cooperation.
And you're listening to Fox News Radio, Fair and Balanced.
The people who brought you the most powerful name in news are going into business.
To a man and woman, the staff that we've already developed on air and off air, there's a certain realness and a certain vitality to them.
Neil Cavuto.
Because a big issue for me with anyone I interviewed was, are they showing passion? Are they passionate? Are they eager? Are they energetic?
Senior Vice President, Fox Business Network.
Sometimes you only get a snippet of that in a resume. But with all the people that we've assembled, there is that common DNA.
And it's unmistakable. I can't define it. I can't describe it. All I can tell viewers is turn us on. You'll see it.
If you care about your financial health, isn't it time you got a second opinion?
If we let people know we're on their side, I think we'll be okay.
To locate Fox Business Network in your area, go to foxbusiness.com.
You Decide 2008, Oprah Winfrey kicking off a three-state tour campaigning for Democratic presidential hopeful Barack Obama. Her first two stops in Iowa, where 1,400 signed up to volunteer for the Illinois senator, a requirement for getting tickets. Senator Hillary Clinton also in Iowa announcing a plan to improve long-term health care.
Lowering the cost of care, improving the quality of care, and ensuring access to long-term care for everyone with coverage, potential, and choices.
At a town hall meeting in Nashua, New Hampshire, Republican presidential hopeful John McCain talking about why people have lost faith in the political process.
Members of Congress believe it's their money, not your money. Not long ago, we spent $3 million to study the DNA of bears in Montana. I don't know if that was a criminal issue or a paternity issue, but it was your dollars. It was your dollars.
Speaking of dollars, they're pleased about the price at the pump. Motorists, not management.
More than 40 residents of rural Minocqua, Wisconsin lined up to fill their tanks with nearly 600 gallons of gas, using their credit cards to fuel up since the station was closed. Local police became suspicious about the rush to the pumps and contacted the store manager. Instead of $3.30, it turns out an employee accidentally offered gas at 33 cents a gallon. The store's manager saying she's disappointed so many took advantage. Mary Regal, Fox News Radio.
Hopes dashed in Hollywood, striking writers and producers breaking off talks, both sides blaming the other for the impasse, the strike in its fifth week. College football's highest individual honor, the Heisman Trophy, handed out tonight in New York. Florida quarterback Tim Tebow is the favorite to win. I'm Jane Metzler, Fox News Radio.
Good morning, everyone. You're tuned in to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. It's Saturday, December 8th, 2007, and today's forecast calls for a mixture of clouds and sun. Highs should reach around 57 degrees with winds west-northwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, you can expect mostly clear conditions with lows around 32 degrees, and tomorrow's forecast calls for mainly sunny conditions with highs around 60 degrees. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with lows around 35 degrees. Today's Monterey Bay Boaters forecast calls for northwest winds 10 to 20 knots, wind waves 1 to 3 feet, along with the northwest swell 6 to 12 feet at 11 seconds. Outside the studio, it is 50 degrees. The time is now 11:06, and it's time to take you to hour number two of the Saturday special, filling in for your host, MZ, Charlie Friedman.
This would be expected.
And we're going to be back in a few moments with the second half of today's Saturday special dealing with veterans issues. I'm Charlie Friedman, your guest host this afternoon.
But really gotta go to KSCO Radio.
And we're back live at KSCO Santa Cruz. Your phone calls on the issues of veterans affairs are welcome at 479-1080. We have a couple of guests on the line, people who are advocates for veterans. And, of course, in the studio with me is Donna Jacobs, who will now say hello.
Hi.
There she is. And we also have, yes, we've got Richard in Watsonville who hung on through the break. We're going to go ahead and take his call next. And after that, we'd like to take your call at 479-1080. Richard, turn the radio down, my man. Turn the radio down. There we go. And are you with us?
I'm with you.
Excellent, sir. Go ahead, please.
Yeah,
My thing is that I've been listening to this for about 20 minutes.
Yes.
30 minutes. The gentleman with Veterans for Common Sense. When you're dealing with people that have post-traumatic stress disorder, where is the common sense? That's one question I'd like to know. I'd also like to know, when did they start up this gold, blue, or silver mothers thing? They didn't have that in the Vietnam War.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. You're incorrect about that. There was a stamp issued back in 1946 for Gold Star mothers. It started during World War II.
Did your mom get a blue star?
No, because I didn't die.
Gold stars when they die, Charlie.
A gold star mother or family is a family that has someone, their child has died in service. If you're a silver star mother or family, you are the parent of a wounded warrior. If you are a blue star mother or family, you have a child in service.
Yeah, so you didn't have that in the Vietnam War. I don't think you even had it in the Korean War. But you did have it in World War II, and you guys are asking for more and more mental health workers. You're saying that they're needed. I think mental health workers are needed on people and parents before these young people go in, not when they come out and the damage has already been done. You guys should have thought of that before you sent your kids in. I mean, slower paperwork.
Well, Richard, if you're going to take that tack, then that means that nobody should join the military because it's dangerous.
Paperwork,
Richard, I'm sorry. That the point is specious. If you're going to just say that nobody should join the military because it's risky. Well, yeah, it's risky. Of course, it's part of what we all take into account when we went in. This is not a valuable contribution.
You saying this is a game?
What, Richard, what's your point?
Well, it's not a game to me, and we don't give out stars because your son or your daughter's in the service. That sounds stupid to me.
Okay, what's your point, Richard?
That sounds stupid to me.
Richard, this is one of those cases where I'm going to have to just cut you off because you're ranting. I mean, you know, this is stupid, that's stupid. That's not valuable, a valuable contribution to the debate. Now, if you've got something substantive to say about veterans' issues, then I'd be interested in hearing it.
Let's talk about paperwork, Charlie. You guys say we got the paperwork so slow. Well, that's due to because there are more applicants, Charlie. Why can't you figure that out?
Obviously I can figure that out. That's not rocket science.
What does PTSD stand for, Charlie?
Post-traumatic stress disorder.
Well, then why does everybody call it a syndrome?
Richard, I'm missing your point.
Well, VA stands for Violence Anonymous. VA is for people when they get out of the military, not while they're still in the military. You guys are trying to equate the Palo Alto VA system with things like Letterman and Bethesda Hospital. And that's just not the case. Those are military hospitals. And I don't know why you guys are not going after those people. Instead of wait until we get whatever's left over from the military and the veteran side.
I can help answer Richard's question for you. Richard, I want to let you know that there are groups of veterans advocates right now going around the country to Fort Carson, to Fort Stewart, to Fort Knox, to Fort Drum, all the way up to Fort Richardson in Alaska. And out there to the barracks in Hawaii, Schofield Barracks. And what these veterans are turning up on the military bases is that those military bases don't have enough doctors to screen the soldiers coming home. And the soldiers, when they get back from Iraq and Afghanistan, need to be checked out to make sure they didn't have any brain damage from the roadside bombs. Remember, 1 in 5 veterans are coming back with mild brain damage from the roadside bombs.
Why don't you call those people military personnel instead of veterans? Because they didn't even put a veterans hospital in Hawaii until a couple of years ago. And I still don't think they have a veterans hospital in Alaska yet, do they?
Richard, I'm still missing your point here.
The point is that instead of being on this side, Donna, maybe you should be on the other side preventing new ones from going in the military. and stop this killing nonsense.
Richard, I'm sorry. That argument only says, well, nobody should join the military because it's dangerous. Yeah, you're right. It is dangerous. I knew that when I went in. You knew that when you went in. That's not a solution. We need people in our military. That point was made earlier. Donna, I believe you made it yourself. What we do need to do, and what I think people today are talking about, is addressing the needs of veterans who run into, you know, run into problems, who come back with either physical or mental disabilities. On the other hand, yes, go ahead, please. It's Carissa,
I would like
correct?
To say, yes, Carissa. I'm with Military Spouses for Change, and what we do is we advocate for expanded and improved mental health services for our service members as well as for our veterans. So we try to do what we can to provide the support services or to improve the support services available for our service members. So it's not just a matter of when they get out. We're trying to focus on what can we do to give them the support that they need so that they aren't quite so damaged after the fact. What can we do to provide to alleviate some of the psychological stress while they are serving?
Very good point. Thank you very kindly.
We are trying to do that. You know, so there are organizations that are trying to work with the DOD, are trying to make changes within, you know, within the system prior to getting out. So it is something that is happening.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're in tune with KSCO Santa Cruz. This is the Saturday special. I'm Charlie Friedman, sitting in for MZ. We're talking veterans issues this morning, and we have open lines at 479-1080. That is 479-1080. If you'd like to ask a question or make an observation concerning our veterans, it's welcome at this time. And Mary Kay, just before we broke at the top of the hour, you were saying something rather important about the focus of the program, and I was wondering if you'd like to talk just a couple more minutes about that and make that point.
Sure, Charlie. I think that's why the coalition that Donna and the other groups have put together here to try to get this event staged at Fort Hood, where they actually address the presidential candidates directly and, you know, my understanding of it is going to be the focus is to ask them what specifically they have in mind for changes about all these subjects that we're discussing here today.
Now, a number of candidates' forums have been broadcast, at the very least on cable news networks, some on major networks. Is this forum at Fort Hood, where Veterans Affairs are going to be discussed by the presidential candidates, is that going to be broadcast? Are we going to be able to see that?
Donna could speak to that, I think, better.
Well, actually, Carissa, could you please answer that question?
Yes, what we're doing is we are trying to get a network to commit to it, and I don't want to say anything specific, but if people can contact networks and let them know that they would like to see this, that the American public would actually like to watch this, that's a problem that we're having is the networks say, well, does the American public really care?
Yeah, will anybody watch?
Right. Do they want to watch these presidential candidates talk about, you know, veterans and wounded warriors and military families and taking care of them?
Well, I'm sorry.
It's distressing. Yes.
We've got a couple of other callers on the phone here, okay. So I'd like to go ahead and see what some of them have to offer. This is Cynthia in Oakland. Cynthia, welcome to KSCO.
Thank you.
Go ahead, please.
Okay, I was listening to the last gentleman, and although it was hard to hear, he raised a point about why people are in the military to start with, which you answered very well. I have a son who's deployed right now, and I have been working in anti-war and issues very actively. I have been working with GI Rights Hotline for soldiers that want to get out. I work a lot on that side of it. Not
okay.
a
Cynthia, let me interrupt you for just a moment.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard the beginning of our program today or not. What we're talking about today are veterans' issues and like that. We're not doing any debate here on the questions of whether we should be in Iraq or whether the war is a good thing or a bad thing.
What I wanted to let you know is that I also work on veterans' issues. I'm very strongly. I'm acquainted with Carissa, and I do lots of writing and working with veterans myself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not mutually exclusive. That was the point I wanted to make. You know that you that. That the last caller wanted to know either or, and it doesn't have to work that way at all. The next thing I wanted to know was anybody out there who has any ideas about how to get across to the American public just how terrible the situation is, the brain injuries, the PTSD, TBI, and the treatment and non-treatment that veterans are getting. Any ideas on how to get this out to the general public it's just essential. It's just absolutely so essential that I can't, you know, I'm having a hard time expressing it.
Well, Cynthia, I want to thank you for your call. That's basically what today's program is all about, and that's why Donna is here, and that's why she's arranged these guests to be with us on by telephone. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Thanks, Cynthia.
Cynthia hits the nail on the head. What exactly are the facts? If we send 1.7 million people off to war, what's society's responsibility to take care of them? 20% are coming back with traumatic brain injury, and about half are coming back with some type of mental health concern. It doesn't mean that they're going to have a permanent mental health problem for the rest of their life. It means they need something addressed soon.
And I would like to say something. Regardless of, you know, there's so much controversy and there are a lot of strong feelings about the validity of our presence in Iraq. But the fact remains, the average American citizen, we expect to be protected, okay? Even if you don't join, your spouse doesn't join the military, we expect to have an armed force to protect us from invasion, to protect us from an attacking force. If we were to be invaded tomorrow, the American soldier would step between you and I and a bomb, a bullet, a tank.
Mm-hmm.
He or she would give his life to protect every single American civilian in this country, without question.
That's the job.
Without question.
Thank
and
you.
So what they did was they were ordered to go to Iraq, whether that was, you know, whether you agree with whether or not they should have gone, but that's what they did and that's what they do. So there needs to be an appreciation for the fact that even though you don't agree with them going there, they can't pick and choose when they go. This is what they do.
Mm-hmm.
This is what they do. And we do expect to have an armed force that will do that for us when they are told to do it.
Very well said. We've got a gentleman by the name of Bob Handy, who's with a group called Veterans United for Truth. He's been kind of listening to the program, and I'm wondering, Bob, do you have something you'd like to contribute at this point?
Well, yeah, I think that what Paul and Carissa are talking about is very significant, but there are other issues that veterans are facing. For example, many veterans, when they come back, especially the National Guard and Reserve, have come back and find they have no job. There is a paragraph in the uniform, USERA, and I forget what the acronym stands for. USERA basically says that when you go on active duty, if you're in National Guard or Reserve, the employer has to keep your job.
Mm-hmm.
Inside that USERA, there's a couple of sentences that say, if it creates a hardship for the company only has to fax Department of Labor, and the job can be done away with. The veteran, when he comes back, has 30 months to file with the Department of Labor, Department of Justice. But to file with the Department of Justice, he has to have money up front to pay for the lawyer. The reason I'm aware of this is back in 2004, I was invited by a general officer to meet with him, who was concerned about the problems that the National Guard and Reserve were having. And out of that, we went, and I'm also the chair of the Veterans Caucus for the California Democratic Party, and we went to the Veterans Caucus at the 2005 convention and explained the situation, and we decided that veterans' issues were nonpartisan, and so we formed a group called Veterans United for Truth. There are many issues that are concerning veterans. For example, I have talked to human resource people. Human resource people talking to me off the record say that if a veteran applies for a job, especially if he's still in the National Guard or Reserve, his application or her application is going to the bottom of the list.
It's incredible you say that, because all my life, whenever I've applied for jobs, I've always made it clear that I was a veteran. And I don't know if it's ever gotten me anything, but it certainly has never gotten me moved to the bottom of a list. Tell you what, Bob, hang on. We've got several callers who've called in, and we want to go ahead and take some of these. We're going to go ahead and listen to Ralph first, because he's calling from – this is unbelievable. He's calling from Albany, New York. Ralph, how in the world – are you listening to us online?
I am.
Well, thank you very much. And I'm not going to tell you to patronize our local sponsors, because from Albany, that would be rather difficult. But thank you for joining us. And what did you want to tell us?
Well, actually, it kind of piggybacks on the previous gentleman's question. I understand that there may be a difference in the way that guardsmen are able to obtain services or have access to services as opposed to regular active military. And I wonder if your guests might expound on that. You know, is there a difference? So many of the folks serving now are National Guard. Mm-hmm. And if they get hurt, do they have access to the same kinds and quality of services?
Very good question. Thank you, Ralph. Appreciate it.
Sure thing.
Thank you, Ralph. You're asking an access question. Right now, here's what we know. About 500,000 National Guard and Reserve soldiers have been ordered from their part-time, one weekend a month service to full-time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for one-year tours in the Iraq War. Here's what we know. The Guard and Reserve are less likely to use VA health care. We don't know why. They're about 5 or 10% less likely to go to a VA hospital to seek care when compared with soldiers who are in regular active duty.
So this is not so much an eligibility issue. They are eligible, but they have a lower propensity to avail themselves of this help.
You're exactly right, Charlie.
Okay, so it's a matter of information. Some of them might not be aware of what they're entitled to in terms of assistance. That could account for some of that difference.
Well, here's one thing that we found out in our lawsuit against the Department of Veterans Affairs. We found out that when it comes to disability benefit claims where the government pays money for disabilities, Guard and Reserve are half as likely to file a disability claim.
Hmm.
However, and here's the shocking part, their claims are twice as often rejected by the Department of Veterans Affairs. Veterans for Common Sense turned around and asked Congress to investigate why are these big discrepancies in the outcomes of the claims process.
That sounds to me like something your organization might even investigate. Let's see what Ed in Aptos has to say. Ed, you're on KSCO. Thanks for your call.
Just a second. I was away from the phone
there. Sorry about that. Our fault.
Well,
Ed, thank you very much for your call this morning.
I had a couple of different points. One was talking to the last hour's veteran. Was it Charlie or what was his?
Possibly James.
James, that was it. Exactly. That he's a Vietnam vet.
Right.
And what's happening in Iraq and Afghanistan is not closely related to what's happening now. There are two different wars. Technology has changed, especially medical technology. And I think your guest from Washington, D.C. spoke to the
A couple of people have made the point that due to the advances, tremendous advances in battlefield medical technology, that many people who in a previous war would simply not have come back, would not have survived.
Exactly.
Instead, now today do survive, but generally with some kind of disability or impairment.
I just took general psych in college, but I think that if you put rats and any kind of an animal in a stressful situation, and you keep it up, you're going to break them, and that's what we're doing with our military, is just doing that. The second point is that one of your guests was saying, well, we ought to do this for the presidential elections, is to watch our politicians. I submit that you should be watching your congressmen and senators, because the Republican Senate seems to be supporting what Bush is doing. And I think he's speaking out of both sides of his mouth. He says support the troops, and yet he won't give the active duty troops a pittance of a raise. And he vetoed the bill that gave them a raise. And he says support the troops. And those people, especially the National Guard, are losing their jobs. You know, they can't get their jobs when they get back. And so what? And they're probably taking a drastic cut in pay to go to the war unwillingly or reluctantly. I'm probably, if they had their choice, they'd rather stay at home. And so looking at what the congressmen are doing at home, I think Sam Farr does an excellent job of supporting the troops and voting for veterans benefits and the pay raise, a better pay raise for the troops that are serving there, people in our military.
Ed, thanks for your call.
Okay.
Thank you, Ed.
Appreciate hearing from you today. We're going to go ahead and let me see. I'm going to take our break right now. We'll be back on the phone with Westside Al in just about 3 minutes. It is 11:29. You are in tune with KSCO Santa Cruz. I'm Charlie Friedman. Today's Saturday special is all about veterans issues, and we have open lines at 479-1080. You are welcome to join us. Right now, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back presently.
Life's pretty good, business is great, and people are wonderful. There's so much more to life than the subprime loan mess. We live in a place many others can only visit. Randy Turnquist understands that. There are buyers who are buying and sellers who are selling. If you need help buying or selling a home, or just have questions about your situation, give Randy a call at 831-566-2590 or toll free 888-496-9655 or visit KSCO.com and search for Realtor. It's that time of year again when you'll be running your old inefficient heater. This year, Day and Night wants to make sure you don't get left out in the cold. We want to help you make sure your home is comfortable, healthy, and efficient. We will even pay you to replace your old furnace. That's right, pay you to replace that old furnace. The new day-night furnaces have newer, more efficient heat exchangers that will keep your family safer and more comfortable this winter. Not to mention the newer furnaces are 20 to 30% more efficient than the older models. And with energy prices on the rise, that means lower bills for you. So if you need a new furnace or just think you might, call for a free estimate. Staley's Heating in Santa Cruz, 831-633-3399. In Monterey, Nichols Plumbing and Heating at 831-393-3470. And AA Heating in Salinas at 831-758-5696. If you didn't get those names, visit us on the web at www.comfortdayandnight.com. That's www.comfortdayandnight.com. Remember, Day and Night wants you cozy all winter long.
Hello, I'm Robert Stangero. Many Santa Cruzans know me as Big Boy. The original Stangero family has been in business since 1879. Our name stands for quality, quantity, and great service. Our Gilda's restaurant on the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf is still the fishing headquarters for the area. It's where fishermen gather every morning for coffee and breakfast before heading out on the bay. Stop by Gilda's and say hello. Both Gilda and my son Dino look forward to meeting you at Gilda's at the center of the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf.
For an extra happy holiday season, think local first. Why? Listen to what your friends and neighbors have to say about why they shop the locally owned businesses of Santa Cruz County first.
Hi, my name is Alexa and I'm from Aptos. And the reason I shop here is because it's local and I want my money to go to my community.
My name is Sean and I love to shop local because I get a better variety of very specific items.
Hi, I'm Laurel from Aptos. I like to shop locally because you just get a feeling that a lot of care and attention goes into what is sold. And it's nice to know that you're supporting people who live here and have community here.
My name is Matt. And I'm from Aptos, and I shop locally because they provide the flavors that I enjoy the most.
Get more for your money this holiday season. Think first of the locally owned businesses of Santa Cruz County. You'll have an extra happy and meaningful holiday season. This message is brought to you by Think Local First Santa Cruz County. For a list of members or to become a member, please visit us at thinklocalsantacruz.org. That's thinklocalsantacruz.org.
And we're back on the Saturday special. Mary Kay, you had something that you wanted to say in response to Ed, who was just calling?
Ed, and also the caller Cynthia from Oakland. First of all, Cynthia was wondering how to make the general public aware of, you know, just get the knowledge out there of what, you know, the wounded soldiers are coming back with in the situation with the VA. I think it's important to remember that a lot of things start very, very grassroots. You know, it begins just going over to visit the VA hospital, visit the patients, tell your friends, your neighbors, your coworkers what you do, or start a small project at work or somewhere, you know, that'll benefit in need of the patients over there. These are things that will get that ball rolling. Pay attention to what your congresspeople are doing, like Ed said, you know, how they're voting on these issues and et cetera. I know up in Livermore, there was talk for a couple of years of closing the entire facility up there, the old Veterans Hospital at Livermore. And it's a beautiful piece of property with a beautiful old building on it that used to be a tuberculosis sanatorium. Hmm. And I think there's money involved there that could be a lovely resort right across the street from the Wente Winery Golf Course and stuff. But Congressman McNierney up there has worked very, very hard and held town forums, town meetings, internet where you can post comments that mm-hmm. he brings back to the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. He was successful in at least not getting the entire facility closed up there. Mm. You know, there was a need to build a new facility in Modesto, I believe it is. But these are the kind of things where you start with this, you mm-hmm. know, and your Congress people locally are there to listen to your concerns, you know. So you build a consensus and talk to your neighbors and approach them with these things. And I know Donna said this time and time again on her weekly show, write your Congress people, call mm-hmm. them, that this stuff helps, it counts. It's daunting, you know, daunting tasks here, but one little voice will help. You be a fly in their little gnat in their ear.
Very good advice. We're going to go ahead and see if we can get a few more of our callers on. 479-1080 is the phone number, 479-1080. Westside Al, good morning. Welcome to KSCO.
Hey, good morning, Charlie and guests. Hey, Donna, good to hear you again.
Hi, Al. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. And you?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for calling in, Al.
Yeah, I had a couple points I wanted to make. Number one, as I'm sure all of you know, and when it comes to the budget for the VA, the president proposes and Congress disposes. And it's not entirely fair to suggest that because one congressman or another voted to increase military pay, that makes him a big supporter of veterans or of the military in general, because a lot of these yes votes were tied to bills that had a definite timeline for withdrawal. And the president had said up front that he wasn't going to sign anything that had the timetable. So
right,
it's still grandstanding to sign on to something when you know it's going to be vetoed.
Actually, that's a very good point. We did have one or two people make the point that a bill providing a military pay raise had been vetoed. And at the time, I was thinking to myself, yeah, but there were other things in it, and that's why it was vetoed.
Yeah,
so I'm glad you made the point.
To really be straight up honest about this, the president has asked for more money than Congress has approved for the Veterans Administration for years, and it just blows my mind that these guys can stand on their patriotic soapbox and talk about what they're doing for the veterans when in fact they never approve enough money for the doggone Veterans Administration. Now, I have a couple points too about National Guard access to the Veterans Administration system.
Yes,
sure, they're entitled to, but you got to figure that most of these guys, I've heard people suggesting that most returning NG and reserves don't get their jobs back. I think most of them do. The ones that don't are the ones we hear about, but the ones that get their jobs back, they probably have employer-paid insurance, so they don't need to access the VA. I got out in 66 from the Air Force. I didn't access the VA system till 98 when I started having some PTSD issues due to the incident that happened that got me my medical discharge in the first place. And they also may be subject to the means test, which indicates that if you're making a lot of money, you're going to be Category 7 or Category 8. Now, one of the things the VA did some years ago, which was a big mistake in my mind, they wanted to up their client base, so they opened it up to anybody that had ever wore a uniform, whether they had a service-connected disability or not. And all these people that had the income to buy their own drugs discovered that with, at that time, a $5 copay, you could get these expensive drugs that you were having to pay for out of your pocket. The hitch was to get the drugs at low cost. They had to go through the VA system and be evaluated and diagnosed. How much resources do you think that took for people that otherwise could have afforded to take care of themselves, as I did for 22 years?
Very good points. Very good points.
One last thing, Paul. This is the fourth time, three times today and one time on Billy Graff's program on Wednesday. You stated that there are 1.7 million combat veterans coming out of Iraq and Afghanistan, but my research shows me there's only 1.4 million in the whole damn military. So what is that all about?
Good question. Right now, the cumulative number of individual people since September 11, 2001, who have gone to the Iraq war zone or to the Afghanistan war zone is now about 1.7 million. What happens is we may have about 160,000 troops just in Iraq, but we also happen to have tens of thousands of soldiers in Kuwait. We have tens of thousands of Navy personnel and Marines aboard ships that are floating in the Persian Gulf and bodies of water nearby. All of those actually count because some of those aircraft carriers are flying air cover for the region and AWACS up in the sky for the Air Force. So the Air Force have people flying out of Turkey and Diego Garcia. So that whole area there has seen 1.7 million unique people.
Okay, but that's just here. I understand now.
One thing, let me interject here. One thing that I would make clear, I was in the Navy, and one of the main reasons I joined the Navy was because I figured that during the Vietnam War, if I was in the Navy, I was absolutely not going to get shot at, which turned out to be the truth. But the people sitting off in the Persian Gulf and the people sitting in Kuwait, they are not subjected to IEDs. They're not subjected to the kind of stress that undergoes combat. So
To put them in with
people who've actually experienced combat, it's just like I don't put my experience on the same level as a Vietnam veteran. I'm a Vietnam era veteran, and that's a different thing entirely.
I wish I could give you better numbers. We actually asked the Department of Defense how many unique people have been to Iraq, and they won't tell you. They'll only give you how many went to the war zone. I wish we could give you a better answer.
But I think what he's saying is he just said, you know, there's one, you say 1.7 million, but there's only 1.4 million active duty. The answer to that is there's 1.2 million in our Guard and Reserve units, and there's 1.4 million active duty soldiers. So that's how you end up with a number like 1.7 million who have served in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Very good point. Okay, I just want to clear that up. In theater is a lot different than
that's how you end up with a number that's larger than our active duty population.
One thing that we're seeing also bothers us a little bit is there are Navy officers and sailors who expected to be aboard ships and Air Force personnel who expected to be at Air Force bases in the rear who are actually doing guard duty and combat missions in the Iraq war zone. Now, that's a very small outlier. It's not the norm, but we do actually have cases of Navy officers being involved in combat in Iraq because they're attached to a Marine unit.
Roger. Okay, I got you.
Thanks for the call, Al.
Thanks, Charlie. Bye-bye.
Appreciate hearing from you. We're going to go ahead and move right on to our next caller. This is Tammy. She's calling from up in Boulder Creek. Tammy, thank you for calling KSCO.
Well, thank you, and God bless you, Donna, for all your hard work. I really appreciate what you're doing. And I just wanted to comment on the question a woman put out there about head injuries, if there was anything from the public. And the only thing I can think of is my brother-in-law goes to the range, and there's, like, these sound-reactive helmets that you can wear that work sort of like a seatbelt that you can, like, shout at each other. But then when there's a loud sound, it blocks it, and it, like, puts pressure on your ear. And I thought maybe these guys could wear some kind of special helmet that, you know, they only use the radio to talk or something. Because, I mean, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. you know. And I think it's ridiculous that these guys are getting that kind of injury. We have so much medical technology. Why don't we do preemptive, you know, special helmet technology?
You're right. One thing that the military scientists found out is that the helmets that our soldiers wear sometimes, but not always, can actually amplify the concussive blast wave from a roadside bomb and focus the concussion on the inside of the brain, inside the skull. They did not know that until they had done some studies. That's why the military has increased up to 20% the percentage of soldiers from Iraq and Afghanistan they think are coming home with a mild traumatic brain injury.
Yeah.
The helmet is part of the problem.
Yeah, it's you know, it's where we spend our money, you know, in prevention, I think, is a lot wiser. And I think that was the point. I was surprised by the point Richard made, too, that there's a different hospital system for military and then for the veterans. I never knew that. My dad was 20 years in the Navy, my brother 10, so that was new information for me.
Tammy, thank you very much
thank
for
you.
Calling.
All right.
Thank you, Tammy.
Appreciate hearing
Bye-bye.
From you today. We're going to go ahead and take our next call. This is going to be Rich in Salinas. We do have open lines at 479-1080, 479-1080. Hello, Rich. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi. You know, I was just thinking if there is a chance that these candidates can be asked military questions if they have this, I guess, this forum you were talking about. Mm-hmm. My suggestion is that all the military, anybody who serves, whether they've died in combat or come back and retired, should have the same benefits that anybody in Congress has, senator or representatives. You know, obviously, it'd be nice to get the same kind of pay while you're in the military, but I don't think that's going to happen. But the benefits after you've left the military, one way or the other, for your family if you've died or if you retire, you should get the same benefits that these congressmen get. I mean, you put out a lot more than they have.
That's an excellent point.
Interesting point. Does anybody have any comment on that?
I agree, and it's really simple. All of the presidential candidates should be asked this simple question. Will you make sure that for the veterans, that when they need to see a doctor, they see one right away, and it's a good a doctor as a congressman or a senator gets to see? And if that veteran is disabled from their wartime service, will you make sure that they get as fast the disability benefits as if a congressman had been run over by a truck? Simple.
And I would like to say, if you go to our website, www.militaryspouses4change.com, and then you click on events/projects, there's the page about the forum with all the information about what we're trying to do with this presidential forum and the contact information. So if you want to try to contact the networks, contact these campaigns. If you support this, you can get more information about what we're trying to do. And the importance is, what we're really trying to do is use this election as a platform to bring these issues to a national level. You know, a lot of Americans just don't know. It's not that the American public doesn't care about veterans and the fact that 25% of the homeless population are veterans. They just don't know. They don't know. And if we were to have this kind of forum, a lot of these issues people would now know about and they would be informed. And then they could turn around and contact their congressperson as well as think about these issues when selecting their nominee. So there's a lot of reasons why this forum should occur. And so you can find out more by going there.
Rich, thank you very much for your call.
By the way, Kay Zwirling did a commentary on this, too, not too long ago.
Yeah, I know. But the thing, she was suggesting that military pay, you know, for your average line soldier be the same as it is for a member of Congress, which is just, you know, that's utterly impossible.
Right. I don't think that's going to happen.
And no, I don't think so
but
either.
But after they've left, they should be able to get whatever a congressman or senator can get in the way of immediate fast service or benefits, whether it's buying a house or getting any kind of care, any kind of help for their family.
Well, we had a couple of people make that point, and then what they suggested was that the benefits available to members of Congress be scaled back.
Yeah,
which
that'd be
I thought that was a much more coherent way
or
of
just transferred over to the military.
Thanks a lot, Rich.
All right,
appreciate
Thank you,
the
Rich.
Call.
You know, I don't know what would happen if a senator
one of those grand poobahs had to wait months to see a doctor. I just don't know what would happen.
You know, I one of our other talk show hosts here at KSCO, Vernon, sent a fax in, and I'm glad he did, because he's got some better information here than I do. This is a difficult show for me to do, because in spite of the fact that I am a veteran, I am not that well informed on veterans' issues. Vernon writes, this year's president, the VA funding, this year VA funding is $86.7 billion. VA funding was $51.9 billion in 2002. So that's a 67% increase over the past 6 years. So there has been more money going to the VA. And as with all bureaucracies, you know, you've got to figure a lot of that goes to inefficiencies and so on and so forth.
Charlie?
Yes?
You're missing the other half of the equation. Can I help you out here?
You can try.
The number of patients and the number of problems per patient has outstripped that 67% increase in funding. The average amount of money spent per veteran in healthcare has actually gone down.
I would wonder about that. And I have good news for you, because Vernon is inviting both you and Donna to be guests on his Moon Balloon program next week and do a little more discussion of this. I would hope that you'd be able to make yourself available, and I'll certainly pass this along to Donna. She knows Vernon. And perhaps that's something that you could discuss with him, because I don't have the information. I think he probably would. He also makes the point that all veterans who've served in combat since November 11th, 1998, are automatically eligible for full access to VA medical benefits. Speaking for myself, I was astonished at, I guess it was what, 3 months ago, something like that. I hadn't had a physical examination since I turned 40, and I'm 55 now. So I figured maybe it was about time I had somebody, you know, check my dipstick and this and that and the other thing, find out if I needed an oil change. So I decided to sign up, and I was astonished to find out what kind of veterans benefits I'm eligible for, and I was never anywhere near a combat zone. I was just a regulation Navy puke for 6 years, and with no service-connected disabilities or anything like that, and I was really surprised at the level of services available to a guy like me. I hadn't expected anything on that level. And that ties into the caller we had earlier. He said, you know, veterans getting prescription benefits, things like this. He's right about that $5 copay, and that surprised the hell out of me. So, yeah, there is a lot of assistance available for people. We've got Bill in Monterey on the telephone. Let's find out what he has to offer. I should mention our phone number at 479-1080. Bill, you're on KSCO. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, hi, Charlie.
Hi.
Stress, the number one killer in our society, correct?
I don't know. Is it? I always thought it was automobile accidents.
No, they say stress is the number one killer in our society. Heart attacks and things like that.
Okay.
Caused by stress.
Okay.
The only way I
strongly resented him calling, saying he was a Navy pilot.
Hello? Hello?
Well, I'm sorry, Paul. That's the way we referred to ourselves.
Well,
Bill, go ahead and make your point.
Yeah, they've done studies, University of Michigan, heart patients that had heart attacks and are recovering, and they found that what worked for them was the meditation. Now, the meditation with the mantra, I checked into that. I'm talking 30 years ago.
Uh-huh.
It was like $150 to take the meditation course. Now, Roy Masters is offering the meditation technique he uses, which is very good. I use it myself. And that brings down your stress levels.
You know, you raise an interesting point, and maybe Paul could comment on this. Alternative treatments, for example, he's talking about meditation. There's also acupuncture, other things that are, I guess, what would you say, non-traditional or non-conventional treatment methods. I don't know whether the VA does any of that or not. Do you?
Can I step in here?
Oh, please.
Thanks. This is DJ. One of the things that I'd like to say right now, there's a gentleman named Joseph Bobro, who's head of the Coming Home Project. There are numerous organizations right now who are developing retreats for not only veterans but for their families. And a lot of people are stepping up to consider alternative health or healing methods for our veterans that are, let's say, out of the norm for what we've been seeing. And so a lot of people are stepping up with alternative methods, acupuncture, therapy, meditation, nutrition. So there are a lot of, I think, a lot of headway being made to bringing in alternative methods for treating our veterans through these retreats. And once again, it's really important that not only are we treating our veteran, but we're treating their families. So these retreats that people are developing to bring our veterans and their families to up to a week for a time are really bringing in these alternative ways of treating our veterans. And I think they are really super important, especially these healing retreats that are being developed right now all across the country.
Well, there's an old saying, if you can relax the body, the mind will follow. But I believe, and of course, anybody who's had a massage knows they feel a lot better after that.
That's certainly true.
Yes, but I think the meditation is really a mental process that goes into your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And although some people will grasp it and it'll do them good, some people it may not work for.
Right.
But when you get into these mental states of mind, I mean, you have to use the meditation to actually get into somebody's mind, because these people have thoughts running through their minds all the time from the horrors of war, and it's hard for them to get detached from them.
Good.
And that's what the meditation does. It detaches them from their thinking processes and allows them to relax a little bit and not overwork their nervous system.
Thanks for the call, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
Appreciate you taking the time. I'm still curious to know if the Veterans Administration provides anything in the way of non-conventional or non-traditional treatments. He raised meditation as a possibility. The one that came to my mind is acupuncture, which I know people who've had tremendous success, but I don't know if the VA does any of that.
Well, right now, Charlie, VA offers two main classifications for PTSD therapy. First classification has to do with giving prescription drugs.
Yes.
And VA is now starting to explore newer, different types of drugs, when in the past they had a very narrow short list of available drugs.
Right.
That
still fits into what I'd say conventional. Prescription drugs is conventional treatment. Do they do anything like chiropractic, for example?
VA is starting to do that. There was a law passed last year that's going to allow VA to do some chiropractic. I don't know whether or not it's going to be related to PTSD. I don't. But the other main group of the way VA treats veterans with PTSD is talk therapy. They do it individually. They do it in groups. Sometimes they do it with some breathing exercises. Sometimes they do it with lights. They're now experimenting with desensitization of having the veteran see some of the horrible events of war, because what PTSD really is at its heart is a veteran who has intrusive thoughts where the war keeps coming back.
So they are at least moving in this direction. We've got a couple of other callers on the line that I'd like to catch before we end the program. This is Joe in Carmel. Joe, thank you for calling KSCO.
Charlie, it's John in Carmel.
John, well, I'm sorry.
Just a couple statements. I've lost all my medical with the airlines and with the VA. They do an outstanding job. Number two, if the government, the Congress, and the Senate really would like to help the veterans, one of the things they could do for these people is give them 5 years tax exempt from federal taxes. What's that going to cost? And the other thing that I heard when I was over at the VA, that the new guys that are getting out and gals that are getting out, they only get 2 years worth of medical service unless they have a stress thing or have Purple Heart or whatever. But the VA does a great job. The only problem is down here in Monterey, it isn't open on Saturdays and Sundays. And for all main procedures, you have to go up to the Palo Alto campus.
Yeah, I found that out when I went down there to that they drew some blood and like that to do a physical on me. But if I actually, you know, blow a gasket or something, I'm going to have to traipse up to Palo Alto to get the help I need.
Right, if you can. But, you know, that's still, it's a great service, and Palo Alto does a great job. So, but the thing that I was concerned about, and I don't know this 100% for a fact, but what they told me there are the new veterans
only get 2 years of medical service when they get out unless they have a disability.
Charlie, the caller is right. If a veteran served in the Gulf War in 1991,
yeah.
or they served in any war...
But that's all I got to say. And which side were you on, the gray or the blue, when you were in the military?
They get up to 2 years of...
Sorry, Charlie. That was bad. Talk to you later.
That's okay. Bye-bye. Take it easy, Joe. Thank you very much for your call.
Thanks, Joe.
Yes, I fought on the Union side. Anyway, we've got, let me see, our next caller is Cynthia. Cynthia, let me see if I can...
Hi, I'm sorry.
There
calling back.
Yes.
Calling back to make the point very quickly that services that are available, technically, theoretically available, are being denied for a lot of reasons. There's just a very strong push in the Army and the VA not to treat these particular injuries, especially things like PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
So veterans have to fight for what's available, and a lot of them don't make it until the time that they're given treatment. They just don't make it. There's a definite problem between what's available and what veterans get. It's ubiquitous. It's throughout the system. It has to do with the military and the Veterans Administration.
Okay, well,
one of the great tragedies that we're dealing with.
Thanks for calling back. Appreciate
You're
it.
You're welcome.
This is Paul calling on a cell phone. Hello, Paul. How are you doing today?
Great. Well, I got to tell you, I always love to talk about veterans because I'm another veterans advocate and stuff like that. And you were talking about alternative stuff. I just recently came back from National Headquarters for the American Legion on some training that I had to do. And actually, the VA has just approved some Indian shaman to be as a part of the therapy for the Indian culture that is an abounding culture within American veterans.
I'll be done.
And understanding some of the things that specifically Indian veterans or Native American veterans, I mean, they like... Some of them like to be called Indians. Some of them like to be called Native Americans. But the whole point is that it's addressing the culture, and the shaman are actually helping them with some of this PTSD, type of problems, as well as through meditation, through certain remedies that are natural and organic.
Well, Paul, that certainly speaks to that question I had of whether they're exploring non-traditional methods of treatment. Obviously, they are.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate hearing from you.
Enjoy.
Have a great day. We've got just about 45 seconds to wind it up. Donna, why don't you go ahead and reiterate the point you had concerning the candidates forum?
Well, I'd just like to say it's really important, and it is up to the American population to step up and do what's right for our veterans and contact your congressman, and let's start changing things with us. I think that's the biggest thing we could do. I'd really like to thank Nadia and Carissa and Paul for joining us today.
Yes.
And if anybody has any questions, or if you're a veteran and you need some help, it's 831-338-7695 for Not This Time Vets. Thank you.
This is KSCO Santa Cruz.
That's all, folks. KSCO, Santa Cruz.
Claiming the detainee tapes were destroyed to protect the identities of the CIA agents involved. Still no word on a Sunday liftoff. NASA engineers still determining whether the shuttle Atlantis is safe to fly. Faulty readings by fuel sensors still a concern.
In the case of the space shuttle, when the gauge gets to E and if you run out of gas, your engine explodes.
Former astronaut Tom Jones. Holiday shoppers with heavy hearts returning to a mall in Nebraska.
The West Rhodes Mall now reopened for business just 3 days after young Robert Hawkins opened fire, killing 8 strangers and himself.
Omaha is a very compassionate city, and we want to be here in support of the opening of the mall.
Omaha Mayor Mike Fahey, who says there is extra security on hand.
Fox Radio's Chris Stanley. The search for a missing pregnant Ohio woman is now over. Fox's Douglas Kennedy.
Police say the missing Toledo attorney showed up at a Six Flags amusement park early Saturday, nearly 550 miles away. They say she claims to have been abducted Wednesday outside her work at a juvenile court building in Toledo, Ohio.
35-year-old Karen McConnell Hancock says she was kidnapped by 2 men and a woman Wednesday morning. Will Oprah make an impact? You decide. 2008, Oprah Winfrey making her first appearances today on behalf of Democratic presidential hopeful Barack Obama. Hillary Clinton also campaigning today in the state of Iowa. And you're listening to Fox News Radio, Fair and Balanced.
Fox News Talk.
Fox and Friends Encore.
Trey Sackins.
How did you develop your opinions over time?
I recall when I went to register to vote, when I turned 18, I asked my father if he was a Democrat or a Republican, and he said, I'm a Democrat. And I said, but you're not, you don't believe that way. And he said, because my daddy was a Democrat and his daddy was a Democrat. So I guess I was the first one in my family that registered Republican when I went to vote.
And Trace, you said you'd go for a third party.
Well, if it was a viable, you know, alternative. I'm just disenchanted with the whole Republican Party at this point. I really just don't think that they've shown any spine over the last few years.
Mm-hmm. So is that the reason to write the book? You have a lot of opinions in here.
I wrote that book because I had been urged to over the last few years, and I've been putting them off and telling them no, and finally I just surrendered and I said, okay. You know, I don't take myself that seriously. That's why the thing says opinions and observations. There's nothing in the book that's true.
Don't miss Fox and Friends weekday mornings on the Fox News Channel.
Still stuck, striking writers and producers breaking off talks, both sides blaming the other for the impasse in contract negotiations. The writers' strike now in its 5th week. A pro football player put on notice by the NFL.
The National Football League says it'll keep a close eye on Dallas Cowboy Terrence Newman when his team plays the Detroit Lions this weekend. This week, the cornerback spoke to Sirius NFL Radio and made a threat to Lions quarterback John Kitna. Newman said, "He Kitna better just hope I don't blitz off the edge," and went on to say, "I've got $15, $20, $30,000, however much it would be for a fine. Revenge will be sweet." The NFL sent Newman a letter, which he posted on his locker, part of which read, "Your comments will now compel us to carefully monitor your activities on game day." Ken Duffy, Fox News Radio.
A college football player about to be honored. The Heisman Trophy handed out tonight in New York City. Florida quarterback Tim Tebow, the favorite to take it home. A website trumping the media with an untruth.
It's the $10,000 tip that wasn't. It's not whether Donald Trump was that generous. He wasn't even in California on the day when reports say he chowed down at a Santa Monica eatery. The story, a complete fabrication by the website Derober, confessing to the LA Times they're pleased with the gambit, saying how many people get on the front page with a story that does not contain 1 ounce of truth. Bill Vitka, Fox News Radio.
Al Gore's in Oslo, Norway, where he's collecting his half of the Nobel Peace Prize, the other half belonging to a UN panel on climate change. Tribute to a native son, a statue unveiled in Albany, Georgia. It plays this song.
Georgia.
The late R&B legend Ray Charles, born in Albany in 1930. The lighted bronze statue of him also revolves. I'm Jane Metzler, Fox News Radio.
Good morning, everyone. You're tuned in to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz on this Saturday, December 8th, 2007. Today's forecast calls for a mixture of clouds and sun. Highs should reach around 60 degrees with winds west-northwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, you can expect mostly clear conditions with the lows reaching around 35 degrees. And tomorrow's forecast calls for mainly sunny conditions with highs around 58 degrees. Tomorrow night, you can expect a few clouds early but generally clear overnight with lows around 35 degrees. Today's Monterey Bay Boaters forecast, northwest winds 10 to 20 knots, wind waves 1 to 3 feet, and a northwest swell 6 to 12 feet at 11 seconds. Outside the studios, it is now 52 degrees. The time is 12:06, and it's time for Perspectives right here on AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. Good afternoon. You've tuned into the Perspectives Radio Show. The Perspectives Radio Show. My name's Donald Davidson. I'll be your co-host. Joining me in the studio today is our favorite doctor of dentistry, Dr. David Biles, and a very special friend of his, Liz Cook. I'm going to say Liz Cook. Okay?
You got that right.
We spell it different than that. We have a very special guest online today, Dr. Doris Rapp. Dr. Rapp, are you with us? Dr. Rapp?
Going once, going twice.
Well, I had her on the air. Okay, well, let me give her another ring. And we had Dr. Rapp on about 3 weeks ago. But Dr. Biles, why don't you give a little introductory and let me try that again.
Yeah, let's go with a little intro. I want to do that anyway. I wanted to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and kick this off here. Happy Hanukkah, too. Great holidays. I'm grateful to have Liz in the audience, or actually on the show here with me. You'll hear more about that as we go on, but she coordinates the Way of Life lectures here in town, and she's a really knowledgeable health educator, as well as having Dr. Rapp on. We had her on previously, and it was kind of an interesting show. In fact, the last couple of shows have been sort of interesting for me. I want to apologize for the last one, though, with Mr. Clifford. I didn't feel as well prepared as I normally am with him, and wanted to clear up some things with that. First of all, I had him on because he has created and developed a test for dental allergies. I use that and offer that to all of my patients who are interested in finding out whether or not the materials in their mouth may be stimulating an allergic reaction. And that is the case with many people. What I would suggest if you want to learn more is go to his website, ccrlab.com. And if you're interested in it, you can go there, go back